shine. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me. Feel the light that shines in me. Feel the light in me.
Only one that come from peace.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Oh, come tell us we are free.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Thunder now won't let it be.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me. There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Once again to One Love Center Presents. I am your host, Rodney Giddens, religious science practitioner, spiritually licensed spiritual counselor, and we have been presenting The Power of Now, a book study by Eckhart Tolle. It's so good to have you here. We are One Love Center. I am the spiritual founder and director, and co-director with Hajra Rahim, who will be joining us shortly. I would like to say welcome, and welcome to One Love Center. We also meet on Sundays, the first and third Sunday of the month, of every month. We meet actually this coming Sunday at 11:30 a.m. at the Village at Gereje, a wonderful space, a meeting space, a gallery space. It's a performance space. There's artwork that goes on there. There's, gallery space. There's also art classes. There is One Love Center, our spiritual celebration that happens on Sunday mornings, 11:30 a.m., as I said, the first and third Sunday of the month. And we are One Love Center. We are a place where love grows. And the address is 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. We are a community that is lovingly created for fellowship, meditation, prayer, sacred service, spiritually supported healing services, spiritual speakers, musical transformances, study workshops, and spiritual films. And I must say, we have a dynamic mission, which is to provide a stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, to play and unfold in their understanding of spiritual principles and spiritual living. It is our vision to see the world, to view the world, to envision the world as a sacred environment where spiritual growth and development flourish through living in the practice of spiritual principles. We see this for one and all, and we know that it is attainable by all. We are a teaching chapter of the Centers for Spiritual Living, which is the overall organization centered now in Golden, Colorado. We are a global organization. We have centers and teaching chapters and study groups around the world. And I am so glad that we are presenting one in Brooklyn, New York. How wonderful. We welcome you. Welcome to One Love Center. So, we have been studying The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment by Eckhart Tolle. It's an awesome book, and I think it actually, I think I can easily say it's a book for beginners and those who are not new to New Thought. I think it's a relatively easy read, and is not as it's maybe not a textbook, but it's not light reading. It's not entertainment either. Nor is it fictional. You can find some real-life examples of your life as you read. And so as we study, as we explore, as we even break down our common understandings, and I mean the understanding as presented by Eckhart Tolle, and our own and your own, and you're certainly welcome to join in, that we get to see what works and maybe what maybe hasn't worked or doesn't work, or maybe we feel that there is some discrepancy in getting to an understanding. However, and I do know this from years of 12-step experience, that spiritual principles are never in conflict. And how could they be? How could love be in conflict with peace or joy? If you're using the word love and experiencing it, sharing it, living it, then someone else will understand that as love. If it's really love, we're talking about capital L-O-V-E, unconditional love. We're talking about a love that has no bounds, because love is eternal. Many of you, I'm sure, have heard that God is love, and if God is eternal, then love is eternal. And so God is peace, and whatever word you want to use or choose to use in the place of God, and even if you don't believe in God, you know that real love is everlasting. Nothing can truly hold back love. There is no greater power than love. Maybe there are equal powers, so to speak, like maybe peace or joy or forgiveness, which incorporates all of those. So maybe with spiritual principles, one is not any greater than the other. However, as I mentioned, they are not in conflict with each other. They are wholly compatible with and to each other. And I think that's awesome. And it leads us to chapter 9. Beyond happiness and unhappiness, there is peace. And we've been delving into chapter 9 for quite a while. And it's our turn to get in it, through it, and past it, beyond it. Yet, I use the hardcover of The Power of Now. chapter 9, it starts off, is there a difference between happiness and inner peace? He says, yes, happiness depends on conditions. Being perceived as positive, inner peace does not. A lot of times I like to present that question as, is there a difference between happiness and joy? And I believe it would be the same answer. Happiness depends on conditions, something happening, being perceived as positive. Joy does not. Joy is like love. It is on its own a wonderful power. It depends on nothing. It, however, is a foundation for you to perceive happiness. With joy, you will perceive life as positive and happy. Actually, anything can happen, and you can still feel joy. It's the ability to go to a funeral. And in the midst of your sadness, in the midst of your loss, you can still get in touch with the joy of having known someone that can even bring you to a point of sadness. Because if you didn't care, you most likely wouldn't feel sad. Do you get my point? So that's how joy can operate. And that's how any spiritual principle can operate. That's how you can be at peace. You can have inner peace in the midst of a storm. I'm sure there are many stories and allegories and myths I'll just stick with stories about great spiritual people, spiritual minds, spiritual presences, being at peace in the midst of great turmoil. Of course, you have the Bible as one, being the most widely spread spiritual book or religious book, which does, of course, includes spirituality. It has a story about the main character in the New Testament, the person known as Jesus the Christ, who was in a boat with his disciples crossing a large expanse, the sea, going to most certainly a very trying time. He was going to meet maybe even certain doom. Almost everywhere he went, you know, he was not necessarily welcomed with great fanfare, with the great fanfare, there was also the opportunity to find detractors or distractors. However, in the boat, as the story goes, his disciples were worried. There was a storm brewing. And I like to think of it as though Jesus were asleep, and they woke him up, and they said, "Hey, Master, what's going on? You know, how can you sleep, and the boat's rocking, and we're going to drown?" And he said, "Hey, be still, peace." He said, "Please, be still." No, peace, be still. And I don't mean to make fun, but I wasn't there. I don't know, and I don't know anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody who was there. So I am taking certain liberties. However, I see it highly likely that Jesus had this consciousness that said, in the midst of this storm, I know inside I am peaceful enough that I can go to sleep, and guys, just relax. And so Jesus spoke his word, "Peace be still," and the seas quieted, and the storm lessened, and the wind stopped blowing, and they made it to their destination. And, of course, that could be just a great metaphor for what goes on within us. There might be great turmoil going on right outside of our physical body, but how do we perceive it, and how do we perceive ourselves in the midst of the storm? Do we have enough power, strength, faith to be at peace with regardless of whatever's going on the outside? So Eckhart Tolle prefaces this chapter 9 by saying, the higher good beyond good and bad. This is page 147 in a hardcover. What do we call positive and negative? He says on page 148, there is only a higher good, which includes the bad. He says the book of Genesis says that Adam and Eve were no longer allowed to dwell in paradise when they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And of course, you know, that's just more metaphor. But once we start deciding what's good and bad, we start to have the experience of what's good and bad. However, if we see as life as only good and that there's only a higher good, that no matter what happens, we are at peace, that we don't perceive anything as bad, unholy, evil, and when we don't do that, we don't invite those things to come into existence. I'm sure there are people in New Thought who have heard, it is done unto you as you believe. It reminds me of what a lot of people think about voodoo. And voodoo is that someone can inflict, and most of the time voodoo is considered like a bad art, like bad magic or a way to inflict pain and harm and unfavorable consequences on somebody. And so usually it can only work if you believe it, if you believe in it, that you believe it has power over you. However, if you only believe in one power, and that's the power of good, the power of God, the power of life, the power of goodness, then there's nothing from the outside that can have any effect on you, on the real you, the true you. Not the little you that believes in things that are outside of yourself that can harm that essence of who you are. I'm talking about the real you, the true essence of who you are. So in returning to the power of now, we're looking down at the bottom of page 148. He says, if a loved one has just died, this is in the middle of the page, or you feel your own death approaching, you cannot be happy. It is impossible, but you can be at peace. There may be sadness and tears, but provided that you have relinquished resistance, underneath the sadness you will feel a deep serenity, a stillness, a sacred presence. This is emanation of being. This is inner peace, the good that has no opposite. So I think that's very powerful. And again, I also will equate that with joy. Not necessarily elated joy or a feeling of joy that you can't be touched by anything, but just that peace on the inside that knows that all is well, regardless of any situation. There is joy in that. We can see the joy. We can feel the joy. So that's my take on it. You can always email, if you're listening to this archive and you'd like to offer your own opinion, thoughts, experience, or maybe there's some fact that I might be missing out, I'd love for you to participate and maybe even set me straight. I don't mind being wrong. I don't like to think that I know it all. And that brings me joy. He goes on page 149. The second paragraph, it seems that most people need to experience a great deal of suffering before they will relinquish resistance and accept, before they will forgive. As soon as they do, one of the greatest miracles happens, the awakening of being, consciousness through what appears as evil, the transmutation of suffering into inner peace. He says, what we perceive as evil from our limited perspective is actually part of the higher good that has no opposite. This, however, does not become true for you except through forgiveness. Until that happens, what he calls evil has not been redeemed and therefore remains evil. You see, forgiveness kind of like wipes away any false vision of truth. And what are we forgiving? Are we forgiving another? We're forgiving really and truly, I believe, ourselves. We are forgiving ourselves for believing that there could be anything that could be labeled as evil, that there is inherent good in everything, in everyone. And only when we focus on someone's mistake, someone's error thinking, sin, as it's also known as, when we focus on that, that gives power to it. Then we want to label it and call it evil. And then when we do that, we have the experience of it as being evil until we practice that forgiveness. He says, through forgiveness, which essentially means recognizing the insubstantiality of the past and allowing the present moment to be as it is, the miracle of transformation happens not only within, but also without. So forgiving that there's any, that one is giving power to the past or the future, it means allowing the present moment to be as it is. Just focusing on the now. Whatever happened, happened. What hasn't happened, hasn't happened. Focus on the now. And that's where true forgiveness is. Forgiveness is, I'm not going to keep bringing up what already happened. It's in the past. It has no power. The only time it has power is when I focus on it. And what happens when you focus on something that already happened? You physically, you mentally for sure, but you physically even feel the pain as though it happened, like it just happened. Your memory will remember the pain. Maybe not the physical pain, but you'll have memory, oh, that really hurt. And once we do that, we start planning our lives based on the past and not being in the present moment. So we need to recognize how insubstantial the past is. It has no substance. And don't give it any. Allow the present moment to be present moment as it is. And allow for the miracle of transformation to happen within you and therefore outside of you, because people are going to pick up that you have changed, and they are going to respond accordingly to you. And I must say, given time, given more present moments, because that will bring them into the present moment. If you're not in the past, they're going to have to be in the present moment to deal with you, as long as you don't go back. Don't go there, or don't go back there. He says, through forgiveness, a silent space of intense presence arises both in you and around you, in you and around you. Whoever or whatever enters that field of consciousness will be affected by it, sometimes visibly and immediately, sometimes at deeper levels with visible changes appearing at a later time. And that's kind of like what I'm alluding to as well. It doesn't necessarily happen right away as far as our awareness is concerned. That change is already happening within them. It's already happening within them. So I think it's so important to continue to have faith that when we practice forgiveness, it is working, doing what it needs to do, doing what it does. So he says, you dissolve discord, heal pain, dispel unconsciousness without doing anything, simply by being and holding that frequency of intense presence. And that intense presence is a presence in forgiveness. Yes. How does that feel for you? Take a breath. The power of forgiveness is in the now. It's in the present moment. It's the only thing that has that is substantial, each now moment. So at this time, I'm going to play just a little song. This has to also do with forgiveness. Many of you might know it. It's called I Release and I Let Go.
There was a time in my life I thought I'd have to do it all for myself. And I didn't know the grace of God was sufficient. And I didn't know the love of God was in Him. But now I can say, you are discouraged, struggling just make it through another day. You got to let it go. Let it all go. And this is what you have to say. I release and I let go.
Yes, release and let go. And when you do that, you are absolutely living in the now. That was Ricky Byers and the Ricky Byers and Agape Choir out of California at the Agape International Center. And certainly that's the way I was able to get into this wonderful teaching of new thought. And science of mind, religious science, and unity, and so many other vehicles of truth. So, yes, thank you, Ricky, and the Agape Choir. And that song, again, is I Release and I Let Go. So, we are in Chapter 9 of The Power of Now. In the hardcover, we've moved on to page 150. Beyond happiness and unhappiness, there is peace. And we covered this last time. We'll briefly go through it. It's called The End of Your Life Drama. So we're not going to spend a lot of time until we catch up to where we were. And I'd like at this time to introduce to some of you and just bring on a wonderful co-host, Hajra Rahim, So, Hajra, say hello to everybody and welcome.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I apologize for being a bit late.
Well, we recognize you in the now, so no lateness. We're practicing. Okay. So, so welcome aboard, and again, glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Talking about the end of your life drama. And usually that's what Eckhart Tolle says, is when the ego is running the show.
Uh-huh.
He says in page 150, about in the middle of the page, ego is an unobserved mind that runs your life when you are not present as a witnessing consciousness, the watcher.
Right.
It says the ego perceives itself as a separate fragment in a hostile universe with no interconnection, no real interconnection to any other being, surrounded by other egos, which it either sees as a potential threat or which it will attempt to use for its own ends.
Right.
Yeah, the basic ego patterns, as it continues on, are designed to combat its own deep-seated fear and sense of lack, resistance, control, power, greed, defense, attack. And some of the ego strategies are extremely clever, yet they never truly solve any of its problems, simply because the ego itself is the problem.
Yes, and name it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, and I'm sure you've heard that you can't solve a problem at the level of the problem. Is that right? Is that how that goes?
That's how it goes.
Yeah. So, and I had this discussion with a coworker today. We were just briefly talking about egos. I think we were actually talking about a coworker, but someone who seems to create issues where there were none.
Yes.
It's like all of a sudden something comes up, and everybody else is at peace,
uh-huh.
and he just comes around. He kind of like swoops in like a vulture or something, and tries to dig up something.
Right.
And what happens is some people will be attracted to that, and others will just move away, you know, look for inner peace and, you know, inside and out.
Right.
Right. So Eckhart Tolle says when egos come together, whether in personal relationships or in organizations or institutions, in quotes, bad things happen sooner or later. Drama of one kind or another in the form of conflict, problems, power struggles, emotional or physical violence, and so on. And he says, whenever two or more egos come together, drama of one kind or another ensues. And even if you live alone at the bottom of the page, he says, you can still create your own drama. Like you don't even need any help. You know, you don't need another ego. One ego was enough, more than enough to create drama. Because when you feel sorry for yourself, that's drama. When you feel guilty or anxious, that's drama. When you let the past or future obscure the present, you are creating time, psychological time, the stuff out of which drama is made. So whenever you are not honoring the present moment by allowing it to be, you are creating drama. So is there anything that comes up for you that speaks to?
Oh, yes, plenty. And I'm pretty sure that whoever's listening can relate to this totally. because this is just the stuff, to me, that life is made out of. And I see it happen all the time with people creating their own drama, making a mountain out of a molehill, they used to say.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. It's not that deep. It's not that important. But yet you're going to keep beating that dead horse, you know. And, you know, for whatever reason, it's important to the person. I know I've had some issues that I haven't been able to let go because, to me, they were unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to get issues resolved. But there are some people who don't even like to get issues resolved. They want to keep it alive regardless. you know, and I've been in conversation with those people because as far as I was concerned, you know, we had a nice discussion or they're involved in a discussion and the issue was resolved. But then they have the yeah, but,
you know,
and right. so then you get all the yeah, buts, even when the issue is resolved, you know, they're still not happy. And so there's just some people who thrive on drama. And I know I have them in my family. You know, if they don't have drama going on, then they create the drama, like you said, with the guy on your job. Or they take whatever situation it is or was back in the day when and bring it back in to the present and beat that drum again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, it's definitely some issue there. But he says here, there's this deep-seated sense of fear and lack. You know,
mm-hmm.
it says the ego patterns are designed to combat its own deep-seated fear and sense of lack.
That's right.
And so at some point, you know, we feel that we're not good enough, not loved, or not worth it, or whatever, that we need to assert ourselves in order to feel good about ourselves. And a lot of times that is at the expense of somebody else or something else because we put people down so we can feel better. You know, like I'm not that bad. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can hear women or guys talking about how much more handsome or stronger, whatever, more pretty than the other boy or girl is, you know? And so there's all this comparison and competition and all this. Not just because you want to build yourself up, but you want to build yourself up at the expense of somebody else. And that's when it becomes about ego.
Absolutely. And it's ego all the way, especially as soon, and maybe it's not a conscious decision, and Eckhart Tolle says that quite a bit. It's usually,
right.
We're not usually paying attention. And so usually
right.
what happens is there is some fear when we realize or when we come to a point of not having faith, when we're not
right.
trusting, when we're not in a present moment, and how could you really have faith in the past or the future? He in this chapter he says unsubstantiality, you know, of yeah, to me, it's unsubstantiality of being outside of the now. You know, anything
right.
outside of the now has no substance. It has no basis. If it's the past, then there's nothing to stand on. It already happened. So
right.
what do we try to do? When we try to bring up the past, like you said, you know, we're trying to beat that drum over again. You know, we want to have some kind of feel, some sense of connection to the
right.
past. It's like, hey, I want to... not just a leg to stand on, I want to create a whole, a new foundation to stand on, but the past, it's never going to work. And it's certainly not the future because it hasn't happened.
Right.
You know, the past is dissolved, really. It's only a memory of whatever
right.
happened. The only thing we can stand on is right now.
Is right
and
now.
And if we're not doing that, then there's plenty to be fearful of, actually. You know, the fear is, yeah, I'm gonna fall. You know, the past is not gonna hold me up. But as long as, like you said, I can beat that drum, as long as I can keep it going, it
uh-huh.
reminds me of the of the little animal in the cage. What is that, a hamster or something that just runs around on the wheel?
On the wheel, yeah, the hamster wheel.
Yeah, you know, and it's just going and going and going, and it's like, it seems as though if we stop just for a moment, there's the end of existence. You know, like, gee, what do I do? You know, if I'm not constantly running, you know, if I'm not constantly moving, it's like if I'm not constantly trying to think, if I'm not trying to constantly make something happen.
Yeah.
For many people, that can create a fear moment because they're only thinking about the past, they're only bringing up memories. Or they're trying to think of the future, which hasn't happened yet. There's no substance there. And so
exactly.
if you're in the present moment and you have to be still, you have to. It says that's where we find inner peace. And if we're not used to it, to that incessant noise of yakety-yak, and you don't need to do that in the present moment, right? We don't, because we're at peace.
Yeah, and we only have the present moment, really. When you really look at what the present moment is, that's the only moment we really have, because that's where we are now. And anything else other than that, like you said, is either part of the past or it's part of the future. And it's only in the present moment that you can make some changes one way or the other. So if there's something that happened in the past, you have to use the present moment to resolve that and be proactive in taking some steps, you know, in, mm-hmm. in making a resolution that you're going to make it a better way, you know, the next time. And then you can have different ways of dealing with the same situation when it comes up again. But just to continue to remunerate on the past and, oh, woe is me, and not take any steps in the present to remedy the situation is not going to help.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same old story. You have to change the story, but you can only change it in the present. You can't change it in the past.
Right, and I agree with you. And even it may not even be changing the story. It could be dropping the story. You just drop it. Let it dissolve. It's, you know, and I mentioned before everybody came on that the past, it's already dissolved. The only time it feels real is when we think it up again. It's like when we want to bring it up. Don't you remember what you did to me? Or don't you, you know, and what happens? The pain feels alive again. You know, mentally and then even physiologically, you know, we might feel pain in our heart space, you know, like, oh, I got a headache because I keep thinking about all this stuff that already happened.
Right.
And it's done. It has no substance. And so it really is incongruous with our spirit to try to give substance to something that has already happened. It's already dissolved. And then we piece it together because you can't ever get it back the way it was anyway. You know, we only pick certain pieces. The ego is going to pick the parts that's going to work best for it. The fear, the scary parts. You know, it's like you go to a movie and, you know, and somebody's, oh, tell me about the movie. You're going to talk about the scary parts, you know, because that's the most memorable, and that's going to bring it up for you again, bring up the pain, bring up the fear.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody else is going to catch it, you know. Oh, yeah, that sounds scary, you know. Yeah, I'm scared of that. I'm fearful of that. And it becomes infectious.
It does become infectious. I was reading one of the ministers, Jim Lockhart, but I'm not really sure that that's the one, where he was talking about today with all the fear and all that stuff going on, that even with... along with that, because he can't deny what fear is there. If you have a broken leg, you have a broken leg. But given that that does exist with what's coming on in society, with the media and all this other stuff, our job as spiritual journeyers is to focus on the good and the love and the joy alongside of that. And what we do when we focus our attention there rather than on the fear or the happenings in society, focusing on that love because it's there too,
mm-hmm.
and it will create a better future.
That's right.
But if we join in with the, oh my God, look what happened here, look what happened there, we're just creating more of the same.
And that's what the media does. I mean, and it's kind of unfortunate, I don't mean financially unfortunate, because it's very fortunate for these media companies, because they make a living off of casting fear, forecasting fear, and recasting fear. It's like more news at 11. I mean, when all these things were happening, I think it was maybe the miners in a hole, or it was a kidnapping, and it was like, day one, day two, day three, day four, day, 99. Tune in for more fear, you know. And that's what they capitalize on. And we do it on different levels.
Yes, we do.
Some people start off their day. I say, good morning. They're like, well, we'll see, you know. And, you know, they just have a negative outlook before the day has even started.
But yeah,
you know, they are already fearful of what's not going to happen good for them in their life.
Right. Yeah, because it's breeding that fear within them as they watch the news and pay attention to what's going on. And it's like you said, the constant, what, they have 24-hour news now?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure.
And it's at you from all different angles, you know. And so if you're not careful and you buy into that and you keep repeating the same story over and over and over and over and over again, which makes you think that a lot of stuff is going on when it really was only really one thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what they do? It's like, hey, there's an update. You know, we have now discovered, you know, and it's really nothing new because, first of all, it's already happened. So it's not new. You know, it's they try to make it sound new, and then you have to watch for the next hour for any more updates.
Right.
And you know, and I don't mean to necessarily put down the news. I mean, you know, it's like, gee, we have a weather forecast, you know, and sometimes that's helpful. not always, sometimes. But I think the main thing is each individual has to know that and we say it's not the opposite of fear, but we're talking about faith. You have to have the faith. You see, fear is just an absence of faith. It's not an opposite to faith.
Right.
And I'd like to think that there are people who will be listening who know that. If not, then you know it now. That faith, there is no opposite to spiritual principle. Love does not have an opposite. There's no other power opposite love or faith for that matter. There's either you use it or you don't.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the things that we like to do, and we do intermittently with the power of now, a book study, is look for similarities in other teachings, and primarily in the science of mind, since we are science of mind practitioners and students, ministers, practitioners. And in truth, we're all practicing science of mind. We're all practicing the power of the mind. We're all practicing the power of our word, the power of our thought. And that most certainly alleviates the belief in fear. I want to read something from the Science of Mind textbook by Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, Science of Mind. And he says about fear, well, he says in the top of page 156, those who have great faith have great power. Why is it that one man's prayers are answered while another's remain unanswered? It cannot be that God desires more good for one person than another. It must be that all persons, in their approach to reality, receive results, not because of what they believe in, but because of their belief. He says, faith is an affirmative mental approach to reality. And so he goes on to say, in the middle of the page, someone has said that the entire world is suffering from one big fear. The fear that God will not answer our prayers.
Mm-hmm.
He says the fear of lack is nothing more than the belief that God does not and will not supply us with whatever we need. The fear of death is a belief that the promises of eternal life may not be true. He says the fear of loss, of health, loss of friends, loss of property, all arise from the belief that God is not all that we claim. Omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence. He says, but what is fear? He says, nothing more nor less than the negative use of faith. Faith misplaced. A belief in two powers instead of one. A belief that there can be a power opposed to God, which may bring evil. So, but we have to have positive faith, faith rightly placed. You know, and so, and I'm saying that when we do that, there is no room for fear because we're operating with positive use of faith. Now, there are some people who, and he says, I think correctly, that there is a negative use of faith. People faithfully expect things not to work out for their highest good, you know. It's like they have more faith that life just is not going to go, it's just not going to go their way no matter what they think. And that's misuse of faith. That's negative use of faith. Because faith is a power, you know, and you use it, period. How you use it is up to you. It's up to the individual. And so I see, and I see how that definitely coincides with what Eckhart Tolle is saying. He says, you know, we have to focus on the now, and the only way to do that is to have a positive outlook. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're focusing on the negative, and we're focusing on the past or the future, and that will lead us down it's just a bad cycle. It's a down cycle.
I call it down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It just goes down the rabbit hole. And when you talk about faith, because like you're saying, we are constantly using faith. We either have faith that it will work or faith that it won't work.
Right.
A faith that something's good going to happen or faith that it's not going to happen.
And either way.
We're focusing the faith. It's just how we're focusing on it. Are we looking left or are we looking right? Are we looking in the front of us? Are we looking behind us? Or projecting what happened in the past into the future, rather than focusing on the future and projecting a better future. So, and that only can happen in the now. That's
right.
The point of power.
Yeah, that sounds like the I think it was Henry Ford quote. I'm not sure, but it's like if you think it. If you think it will work or if you think it won't, no, how does that go?
If you think you can, it will.
If you think you can or you think you can't.
You're right.
You're right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And many people, so what happens is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
If it's not working, see, I told you it wasn't going to work.
Right.
You know? And and that's that ego. It stays in that cycle, that spiraling downward cycle, and of negativity, of fear.
I know when I told my granddaughter about that, when she was talking negative about something, I said, you need to speak what you want into existence. And so listen to what you're saying, and if that's what you want, then you speak it. But you're speaking negativity into existence, and if you keep doing that, you're going to get what you're talking about. And so that helps her to reframe what she was saying, and then she started speaking positive things into her future rather than bringing back the past and projecting that into the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really helped turn some things around for her. But that's where we have our point of power, when we realize and we become conscious of the fact that the power of life or death, as they say, is in our tongue. It's right there. It's the words we speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we speak those words out, and when we speak those words out, it creates what we have spoken. And as we become more and more aware of that, more and more conscious of what it is, what's going on, and more conscious of the words we are speaking, and then we'll have more and more control over what happens in the future because we are creating it ourselves. But we'll be great on a conscious level. There's a song that says, do you really, he says, his name is Anderson, minister in Oregon, and he's also a singer. And he has this song that says, do you really think what you're thinking about? He says, we're always thinking. I'm always thinking, and you are always thinking. But are you thinking about what you're thinking about? Mm-hmm. And so to become more aware of what our thoughts are saying before we open our mouths, so we can change the thought, change the words, and then speak into the future what we want from the now.
Absolutely. And that's what Eckhart Tolle has been talking about. You know, and we certainly get that, to release the negativity.
Right.
Now, on page 154, the next section, and we're going to move on a little bit more, it says the impermanence and the cycles of life. This is on page 151.
151?
Yeah, and it's accepting what is.
Uh-huh.
It's accepting the cyclical nature of life, that everything has a cycle, up cycle, down cycle. You know, unfortunately,
right.
what we do is when we look at the cycles, we think up cycle is good, down cycle is bad. You know,
right.
once again, we instantly create drama when we use time and then judgment and just are getting lost in further away from the now. And so in the now, he says on a level of form, there is birth and death, creation and destruction, growth and dissolution of seemingly separate forms. He said this is reflected anywhere, everywhere, in the life cycle of a star or a planet, a physical body, a tree, a flower, in the rise and fall of nations, political systems, civilizations, and in the inevitable cycles of gain and loss in the life of an individual. It just happens. You know,
right.
and when we can be present to that, that we are certainly in the now, and we are certainly experiencing inner peace. Now, I just have to say this. In this country, the United States of America has yet to experience a fall, has yet to experience, how does he say it, the rise and fall of nations. This nation
right.
is still somewhat rising.
Right.
But if you look at a lot of old nations that have been in it, that have had numerous risings and fallings.
Right.
That's, you know, I think what happens in this country is it's fear. It's like we don't want that to happen to us. We don't want anybody to bring us down. We don't want anybody to take this away from us. And and this country has a whole lot of people existing on a level of fear.
Right.
You know, of what they are going to do to us. You know, and I just wanted to speak to that really quickly because when we don't, when many of us kind of separate, remove ourselves from that thinking, other people think we're not patriotic, and yeah, they might be right, but yeah. But you know, after 9/11, I had friends who were ready to sign up and run into the army, even though they were overage. You know, they were like, we got to get them back, you know, and there was no inner peace in them at all. They weren't focusing on the now. They were focusing on a lot of different things, what the media said. And, they, of course, they were being fed fear.
Uh-huh.
All right. They were focusing on the past, even the events that had just freshly happened and even things that happened before. And now you're going to pile them all into the now. And I'm just using this as an example. Where many times, you know, fear is also involved in this, is also involved in the cycle, the impermanence
right.
of life. People don't want others to make their transition. No, don't die, you know. And it's like we understand that we're close to people, and or maybe it's an animal, or maybe it's a car. You know, some people, you know, will do their darndest to keep their car alive forever. I know I did. I was piecing it back together. You know, steering wheel was almost coming off in my hand. You know, I was not giving up my car. You know, no, it's not dying on me. You know, and I had to let it go. It was dangerous. You know, my ego was like had me working on my car all day, all night.
Wow.
And I still couldn't get it working right. You know. The fear was, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to get another car? I got another car. I got a great car.
Right.
That's been with me a long time, you know, and I don't have that same feeling anymore.
Right. Well, you know, he says you have to let it go, the up and the down cycle, that if you cling and resist at the point, it means you are refusing to go with the flow of life. And you will suffer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it says if a growth, whatever kind, were to go on, it would eventually become monstrous and destructive.
Mm-hmm.
That solution is needed for new growth to happen. One cannot exist without the other. And so in order for it to start to come into play, you have to let go of the old one.
That's right.
And what it says here also, we're getting down to the bottom third of page 152, and this is what really stuck with me, and I was wondering about this, the particular thing, and he's saying the down cycle is absolutely essential for spiritual realization. You must have failed deeply on some level or experienced some deep loss or pain to be drawn to the spiritual dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Failure lies concealed in every success, and success in every failure. And all forms are impermanent.
And that is so true, and thank you for bringing that up, because most of the things in our lives that have form, I mean, some of them are come out of failures. I mean, plastic.
Right.
Plastic was a failed experiment. I forgot what
right.
they were trying to make, but it came out as plastic.
Uh-huh.
Which is,
A lot of the advances have come out of failures. It's just amazing, or happenstance or accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now look how almost indispensable plastic is. You know, now we might want to call it a success on one level, but boy, we sure can't get rid of that. You know, and it's failing us now. You know, because it's so hard to get rid of. But
right.
I know that as far as this planet is concerned, there's nothing permanent. I mean, the fire in the center of this planet can destroy anything.
Right.
So when the planet is ready, it will recycle itself.
Exactly.
And there won't be anything left. And that's really impermanence. You know, there's nothing we can do about that. And so I think that's the macro vision, you know, and micro, our own personal lives. It's like so many stories in movies and have been written about people who try to hold on to life. There was a TV show back in the 1960s about this guy who was an immortal, and his blood would keep somebody alive forever. And there was this old man who was always trying to capture him and use him as, you know, and just drain his blood and put it into him so he could live forever, like this immortal guy. And so they chased him all over the world. You know,
wow.
I don't remember how it ended, but yeah, it went on for a few seasons. But that's just another example of the lengths that people go through to try to cheat the impermanence, live forever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's fear.
Right, and to be young forever. You know, that's the big thing now is everybody wants to be 20.
Yeah.
Forever. So we're 20 and act 20 forever, you know. And it doesn't happen because we have the up and the down cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we realize that, you know, that there's up and down and there's this flow like the ocean, you know, and the tides go in and out. And so we have to take time to be active and time to rest. And continuing on page 153, I really love this. He says there are large cycles and small cycles within these large cycles. Many illnesses are created through fighting against the cycle of low energy, which are vital for regeneration. The compulsion to do and the tendency to derive your sense of self-worth and identity from external factors, such as achievement, is an inevitable illusion as long as you identify it with the mind. Then it says that the intelligence of an organism may take over as a self-protective measure and create an illness in order to force you to stop so that the necessary regeneration can take place.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was reading that right before you started. So I'm glad you definitely picked up on that. And we say that to each other, I mean, as human beings on the planet, you know, when somebody feels low or ill or sick, or I was on my back for a week, you know, it's like, well, I guess I was running too hard and, you know, my body made me slow down.
Exactly.
You know, it's like mentally we want to keep going, but physically, you know, you need to regenerate. Even even after the 8-hour work week or work day, or you know, at the end of the day, we need to regenerate. We need to sleep. And it's funny because there's a difference between rest and regeneration and
right.
sleep. You know, it's like they're not all the same. Because sometimes
right.
you can have a restless sleep.
Right.
You know, what we're looking to do is regenerate. You know, we want that kind of a sleep. And we know when we need it. Now, it's funny because it's been said that nobody ever died from a lack of sleep. You know, and you know why that is? Because if you are so sleepy, you're going to go to sleep. You're not going to die. You know,
right.
your body's like, okay, that's it. Pull the plug, you know, hit the switch. You're going to sleep for a while, no matter how
right.
hard you try. I don't
right.
care how many drugs a person will take. Eventually, they're going to get some sleep.
Right.
You know, and that organism will say, okay, well, if I have to get you off of your feet one way or the other, you're going to regenerate.
Right. And I had a girlfriend in Seattle who was just go, 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 go. And she wound up in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd be off, you know, she has to, you know, she couldn't do anything for a couple of months. And then she gets back well and she go, 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 go again. And it was a pattern for her. And I'm like, when are you going to stop doing that to yourself? You need to stop and get some rest. But she wasn't resting. She would go home, and then she would be up, get in late, up and out early, go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept knocking her on the butt.
Yeah. And that all that is denying the cycle, the normal cycles.
Right.
Of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is helping me a lot because I'm really coming back off of vacation and stuff and really looking at balance in my life and the cycles of up and down, in and out, activity and inactivity. You know, I have to look at what I'm doing and how much of a commitment I'm making and when do I get my rest in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to reschedule things, look at my calendar closer, not pack too much in a day, you know, and just keep it moving that way so I have time to actually do the rejuvenation that I need to have for my
mm-hmm.
own self. Because I'm one of those people who can go, 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 you know. And so I have to become more conscious of the fact that I need to take time for me and not crowd my day, not crowd my schedule, not crowd my to-do list with things that will take me into overdrive and overkill and doing too much. So I'm at a loss for my own self, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the focuses that when I came back home from my vacation in Seattle, because I had a wonderful time in Seattle. I did. I was a whole month there. I had a great time. But I totally overdid it. Like I'm trying to pack all these people, all these things to do into this little period of time, and I overdid it totally, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm still recuperating from that, and I'm looking at it and saying, wait a minute, Hadra, you have to really look at the amount of time and energy that you're putting out and the amount of time and energy you're giving to yourself so you don't get stuck, because I was stuck. You know?
I know. Listen, I know, because you know, I kind of left you alone. I said, well, when I hear from you, I know you're settled again. So I knew that you were going through that. So
I went through it, and I'm like, okay, FYI, you know, because who knows?
Mm-hmm.
If you have to recognize that and continue on with that, you know, I wind up in the hospital.
Yep. Yeah. So as we're moving on in chapter 9. And we're about halfway through, and I thought we might get to chapter 10, which we probably won't, but that means we'll just pick up with it again next week.
Okay.
And so he relates a lot to Buddhism. He talks a lot
right.
about the Buddha. So I definitely want to bring this up. He says, The cyclical nature of the universe, this is on middle of page 153, is closely linked with the impermanence of all things and situations. The Buddha made this a central part of his teaching. All conditions are highly unstable, and in every condition, every situation you will ever encounter in your life, it will change, disappear, or no longer satisfy you. Impermanence is also central to Jesus' teaching. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves can break in and steal. Nothing lasts forever. You know, don't try to hold on to it forever. You know, I think I knew I had some friends in college who are Muslim, and every time I would remark about something that they had, hey, man, that's a nice-looking shirt. Oh, you want my shirt? You can have the shirt. You know, and they, whatever the Islamic teaching was that at least their interpretation of it, was if somebody else kind of liked it, I don't even know how it interpreted, but, you know, don't feel like you have to hold on to it. Give it to them.
You know?
Now, I never said I liked the car. You know, I should have been thinking. I would say, oh, man, it's a great car. You know, I didn't think that at the time, but now, you know, I'll try it next time. But to me, that reminds me of not having any fear of relinquishing something, of giving something. You know, the fear that something won't come back, or I will be blessed with something else. It doesn't have to be greater or any, you know, or that I'll be just fine without it. You know, without that fear. So that also has to do with the impermanence. It's like, no, I don't need to keep this permanently. Like, I remember when I was growing up and I had jeans, the dungarees, you know, forever, with holes in the pocket and the knee, you know, and frayed at the bottom. And, they were fitting comfortably, but, you know, it was time for them to go.
Yeah.
And we'll just put more patches on it and have a jean full of patches. More patches than the original cloth. But some of that is out of fear. I'm never going to find a pair of pants that fit as well as these.
Yes.
You know, and we can have thoughts as innocent as that. And not realizing that it's a fear thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and stuff like that does come up. So, you know, and so there are, you know, aspects of Buddhist teaching where there are monks that go through the streets and they don't have any possessions and they have their handout and they exist only through handouts. Or at least it looks that way when they're in the street. But to some, that's a practice of impermanence, of not holding anything, not having, not owning, you know, in believing that, and they don't necessarily believe in God, but in believing that the universe, that life, that nature will provide, you know, and that's their faith.
Right. Well, you know, we all go out the same way we come in.
Yeah.
And they say you can't take it with you, you know?
That's right. That's right.
And so the ultimate of realizing that, you know, you're going to be transitioning into another level and you can't take any of this stuff with you, regardless of how fond you are of it, it's not going to go with you. And once we can realize that whatever we have, we can enjoy it now, but it's not going to go with us. And since it's not going to go with us, then we can, like, be less, hold on to it with less vigor and be willing to let it go, because it will go. It will go.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I was, when my mother passed and when my father passed, you know, and we went into, you know, the house and stuff and was cleaning up and this, that, and the other, and all this stuff, you know, that they have, all the car and the cards and the clothes and the this's and the that, all the stuff they were fond of, all of that, nothing had any value anymore, because it was only valuable to them. And so we packed up stuff and took it to the homeless shelter or to the Salvation Army or where people, you know, the secondhand store, where people could come in and get it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter how much it cost, you know.
Right.
It was time to let it go. And so we took it and we bagged it up and we took it and we donated it, you know.
Well, you guys are obviously not Egyptians. They built tombs and bury everything. If they had
yeah.
a car, they probably would have buried that with
they
them, too.
The whole thing, right? And I remember when I retired, and I was looking at my office, and I've been in this office for years, right? And I picked out the stuff that, you know, that was my personal stuff that I had there. But everything else basically belonged to the school or the school district,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I was able to put all of my personal stuff that I took to the job with me in a couple of boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is years in this office. And I walked out of there with two boxes with all that stuff.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that would get on the news, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, principal
wow.
leaves with only two boxes.
Only two know? Boxes. It's like, you know, I had no need for it. I wasn't going to do anything with it. It didn't really belong to me, but it was public property.
But still, I think there's an even greater thing. You were operating not from a fear of loss or fear, period. You know,
right.
you were operating with freedom. And you're allowing yourself to be in the now. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
And as it, now, it could have been a fear. I say it could have been a fear because it could have been a fear of bringing a whole bunch of stuff home. You know, what am
yeah.
I going to do with all this stuff in my house? You know,
yeah.
so, but I also wanted to add that there is healthy fear. You know,
uh-huh.
there is fear. I tell people, if you see a lion in front of you, it would be a good thing to have fear within you. Maybe not show it that you're afraid,
uh-huh.
but, you know, have the fear enough within you to say, hey, you know what? I need to make a decision here.
Right.
You know, am I going to run? Am I going to hide? What am I going to do? You know,
right.
there is fear on a certain level that is healthy, you know, that the ego can operate with. The main
right.
thing is don't give ego the keys to the kingdom, the keys to the
right.
car. Don't let the
right.
ego drive, because then the ego
right.
wants to go attack the lion. You know, it's like, no, wait a minute, no. No, we're not operating out of that. So, you know, in some respects, there is fear that is helpful. You know, have a fear of drinking poison, you know,
right.
or smoking poison or eating poison.
Right.
You know, it's good to have a fear of that, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to bring that out for our listeners as well. So what I'd like to do now is, since we are nearing the end of this session, and we're really moving away from the impermanence and moving now into using and relinquishing negativity on page 156. So I do want to say that on the top of page 156, there is something I wanted to mention about the happiness and unhappiness on
uh-huh.
page 154. He says,
okay.
Buddha taught that even your happiness is dukkha, a Pali word meaning suffering or unsatisfactoriness. It is inseparable from its opposite, means your happiness and unhappiness are in fact one. Only the illusion of time separates them. So he's saying it's simply recognizing the nature of things so you don't pursue an illusion for the rest of your life.
Right.
So if we're allowing for something to create suffering in our lives, and because we're not feeling satisfied, then that's an illusion.
Right.
And I think that's what he's saying. He's saying that a sense of permanency and fulfillment is a recipe for frustration and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
to seek something through things, right? And to have try to make an identity. It's like people who identify with their car.
Right.
You know, they have a beautiful car. It's so they keep it shiny and bright and clean all the time and polishing it. And, you know, they go crazy over a scratch because they identify with that car. That car defines them.
Right.
That if anything happens, nothing even has to happen for them to suffer. They suffer
right.
in trying to keep it looking the way it is.
Right.
Even though they may not appear that way, but they don't usually seem to be happy because there's always going to be a spot that they didn't catch. There's always going you know, it's like, you park it, you know, and you walk away and you keep looking at it as you're walking away, you know,
yeah.
And you don't want to park under trees because a bird might, you know, put some droppings
what?
On it. And it's like there's no inner peace there, you know.
Right.
And so they seek to find identity through things. He says, the more you seek happiness in this way, the more it will elude you. Nothing out there will ever satisfy you except temporarily and superficially. But you may need to experience many disillusionments before you realize the truth. You know? And so that's comes up a lot for us, you know, in big ways and little ways.
It does. And like you said, some of us may have to go through it many times.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when the children of Israel went through the desert, it's like, how many times do you have to go around that same mountain? You know?
That's right.
They went around that mountain for 40 years. And it only took a few days or a couple of weeks to get through the desert. So they kept
mm-hmm.
going around the mountain because they
mm-hmm.
wouldn't give it up.
Right.
And so when we, you know, we have to keep going around that mountain, keep going around that mountain, keep going around that mountain until we realize, look, I've been around this mountain too many times. Let me sit down and figure out what's going on here. You know, I just got to give it up. So I don't
yeah.
keep going around the mountain. And when
yeah.
we do that, we can let it go. When we can release it and let it go, then
yeah.
we'll find that happiness because it's not in the thing. Then happiness is an internal sense of well-being within yourself, knowing that you can have what you need, get what you need, and you can also let it go.
That's absolutely correct, and that's perfect because that's how we started off. Well, you guys weren't with me, but that's how I started off the chapter, talking about joy, that there is a difference between happiness and joy. Because
right.
he says beyond happiness and unhappiness, there is peace. So he talks about the inner peace. And that's
right.
what you're mentioning. So that inner peace, he called it the peace of God, the inner state of peace. Now, what he does say, and what I firmly believe, he says things and conditions can give you pleasure. This is in the middle of 155 in the hardcover.
Right.
Can give you pleasure, but they will also give you pain. Things and conditions can give you pleasure, but they cannot give you joy. Nothing can give you joy. Joy is uncaused and arises from within as a joy of being. It is an essential part of the inner state of peace, the state that has been called the peace of God. It is your natural state, not something that you need to work hard for or struggle to attain. And I think with that, we're going to pick up next week with from this place, from page 155. And I just want to say...
About that before you leave.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, please.
If you want to know what that joy looks like that comes from within, that you don't have to struggle for or work for anything like that, just look at a baby. They're just
mm-hmm.
joyful. They're just happy to be here. And they giggle and they laugh and they just have a good time sometimes all by themselves.
And the truth is, and I mentioned this numerous times, is that joy is a foundation for happiness.
Uh-huh.
So you can't feel happiness unless there's an inner state of peace and joy within. And so babies, they're just naturally, you know, what they call a bundle of joy.
A bundle of joy, right.
Because it doesn't look like anything is happening. and they are just giggling and googling and all of that. You know, they could be playing with their toes and having the best time in the world.
I know.
You know,
great.
And stick their big toe in their mouth and, like, you know, wow, that looks like so much fun. It's, you know, and we can't do it, but, you know, I think we would probably feel joy within if we could.
Yeah.
Like, wow, haven't done this since I was, like, you know, 0.5 years old, you know. But and so I just want to really say thank you so much, Reverend Hajira, for joining us. And
thank
to
you.
Our wonderful silent partner, Brenda, who is listening, and all those who will be listening and who are listening. And we thank you all for being here. I do want to say, I want to mention that Hajira, Reverend Hajira, is a religious science practitioner as well as a licensed minister with Centers for Spiritual Living. And I want to invite each and everyone who is listening to use us. We are here for you, not just on Wednesdays doing the book study, but we're available every day or any day. We're available for prayer, for spiritual mind treatment, which is affirmative prayer, where we'll get to know the truth about you, about your condition, about your circumstance or situation. And like I love to say, that if there's so much joy in your life that you don't know how to handle it, we can help you with that. We can help you to absolutely handle all the joy that comes into your life. And if there's anything that feels like less than joy, we're here for you for that as well. Now, if you'd like to make a prayer request, you can do so on our email, onelove@onelovecenter.org. And we will most gladly respond to you. So we are available after our celebration services. Our celebration service, Sunday celebrations, are the first and third Sunday of the month. We have this third Sunday coming up, and yours truly will be leading the celebration service, of course, with Reverend Hajira with us as well. And we're focusing on our whole yearly theme is on dreams. And in this particular theme of the month is, oh, well, gosh, let's see, this is September still. So we're talking about expectancy, and all of the good that comes from positive expectancy. So I again invite you to join us the first and third Sunday of the month. Reverend Hajira will be doing the first Sunday in October. So we are One Love Center, and we are a place where love grows. We welcome each and every one of you to participate with us. Would you like to say so long, Reverend Hajira?
I second everything that Rodney has said, and I do invite you to come and enjoy our fellowship and our talkings and our teachings, because it is life-changing. It gives you a different way of looking at things. And like Wayne Dyer said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yes, indeed. And we are so, so happy and joyful with a lot of inner peace, practicing living in the now with the power of now. As we close, listen to a wonderful song called Guide Me, God, from a Rasamelo album. What we do is practice, practice, practice positive thinking, positive living, and just sharing the wonderful life, knowing that there's only one life. That life is God's life. It is whole, perfect, and complete as me, as you. Peace and blessings. Thanks for being.
Good night.
Good night.
Ezra. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Very good. Very
yep.
good. So
yep,
next Wednesday, I'm going to be in Florida.
Okay.
I know. I turned you on. You can talk too. Brenda's here. You can talk.
Oh, hi,
Brenda. It still says Block Talk. Hey, Hadra.
Good.
Yeah, but it's not recording.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know where I'm going to be or what accessibility I'm going to have to Wi-Fi or anything.
Right. Okay.
So will you be able to run
the
show?
Because
I'll be able to call in, but you know, I don't know if I'll have Wi-Fi or anything. I have no idea where I'm going to be.
Okay. But you're going to be down in Florida someplace, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be in Tampa. Yep. Oh, you know, I didn't send you that cruise information. I'll do that as soon as I can.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that was good. So, yeah, we got to finish this book up. We got to finish this book.
Well, you also just should determine what's the next book.
Yeah, that was my next question, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, we could do the book again, but I don't know.
We got to get off of this and get something else.
So what do you want to do? You want to do a science book? You want to do an Ernest Holmes book?
One of the light ones. Definitely not the Science of Mind textbook. That would be for every day.
No.
It's not deadly.
One of the, you know, like creative ideas or creative ideas and success, something like that.
Would be
a nice one.
Love.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, another option, and it's kind of like what I intended for this, is to do a book that's not Ernest Holmes,
mm-hmm.
but use his other books to relate to what we're using.
Right.
Okay.
Like Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah. So we're looking at some current books that are on the market now that everybody's looking at. It's like a lot of Wayne Dyer's books. You know, people aware of them or something on that order.
Right.
Yeah, like Carolyn Miss.
Yeah, so there are books, you know, that are current with, you know, current authors who are alive right now.
Right, so that way we can introduce them to Science of Mind, because a lot of people find us that way anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, it was like, so many people told me You Can Heal Your Life.
Louise Hay.
Right. Oh, Louise Hay sent me. I'm like, okay, you know.
Well, yeah, she was
even though
foundation is inside the mind. She was a practitioner.
That very same book.
Yeah.
For Your Life is an awesome book.
Let's figure that out.
You Can Heal Your Life. A lot of those in the Science of Mind textbook are the meditations and the prayers that Ernest Holmes did. She just took them in and condensed them.
Right.
Yeah.
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 She came out of First Church anyway, so.
Right. So it's right there. You know, all of his ideas about the body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah.
So I actually think Louise Hay is a great choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And she has quite a few books. We have to figure out which one we want to focus on.
Well, I think You Can Heal Your Life would probably be, I don't know. Where is mine?
Well, her last book, and I just picked this one up, is All Is Well. It says Heal Your Body with Medicine, Affirmations, and Intuition. And she co-authored it with Mona Lisa Schultz.
With who?
Mona Lisa Schultz.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just her latest one. Yeah. And
That's why.
I mean, it's just one of many.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we could do You Can Heal Your Life.
You Can Heal Your Life. That's fine.
Well, I mean, yeah. I don't know. That's the only one I can think of, I mean, that I would really want to do.
Okay. That works.
Or Brenda said Wayne Dyer.
No, I said, what about Wayne?
Wayne?
Wayne, yeah, I'm not necessarily, I'd rather have Louise Hay over Wayne Dyer. But.
So, yeah, I guess we can look it up. I mean, we still have a little ways to go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Louise. Good. She's a good choice.
All right, that sounds good. So, so one thing is, I have another school term starting, and I have to do an internship, which is, you know, it's not necessarily for people who are already doing what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, but everything I do is technically an internship.
Right.
Even what, you know, with the power of now.
Right.
So I'm going to talk to my dean, mentor, dean, whatever, Reverend Catherine, to see if it could be my intern mentor.
Who?
So, because you're here. Yeah,
I'm
she's
sorry?
In Florida. You're here, you know.
No, no.
So you just
kind of
sign off on everything.
I missed something. What did you say? You're going to see what?
I said you would like, sign off on stuff. Like, you were like, okay, yes, he is doing this, and he is, you know, the intern.
We have to get me registered. I'm not registered yet.
As what?
As the minister at One Love. There's paperwork that needs to be
called.
Done.
Yeah.
So we got to get the paperwork done.
I'll be talking to her about that also. But, yeah, so, I mentioned.
So the minister doesn't have to be an ordained minister?
I don't know. Oh, no,
okay.
No, not ordained, I don't think, no.
Okay, all right. But, you know, we have to see what the qualifications are. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I mean, she and I are going to talk about that.
All right. But I do
I know we got to get together and talk about a bunch of stuff.
Right.
Before the meeting.
Right.
So tomorrow I have a couple of things to do after work.
Okay.
I'll check in with you.
Okay.
All right.
All righty. Sounds
all
good.
All right. Thank you, my love.
Thank you, Hadra.
Thank you. See you later. See you Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday,
everybody. Huh?
It's Sunday already?
Oh, yeah, right. See you Sunday.
Yep.
Yay.
Sunday.
Okay. All right.
Take care.
Okay. Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.